We're holding Chaf Zayin Amud Beis by the Mishnah. We learned yesterday about Nidrei Oinsin, or the last couple of days, about Nidrei Oinsin, where a person makes a neder and there was an onus that prevented him from being able to keep the neder. So now, here the Mishnah is going to give us another example of Nidrei Oinsin. The Mishnah says, Nidrin Laharogin, you're allowed to make a neder. And what the nature of the neder is, we'll see in a minute, to harogim, to people who kill. So the Ran explains, we're talking about Jews, because that's why later on the Mishnah, if you tell them that something, for example, is truma, they're going to pay attention to that. Unfortunately, though, these are Jewish mafiosi, or whatever you want to call them. They will kill people. The Mefodish says because of money, or it could be whatever. They may be contract killers, doesn't really matter, whatever. The point is that they may be threatening a person to kill him, and he'll make and they'll force him to make a neder, and that such and such will be also to him, let's say, or that such and such an item is not his, that it actually is somebody else's, and if not, then they're going to kill him. In other words, exactly that. Tosfos also mentions this point about money. The Ran doesn't mention money either, and neither do other Mefarshim. The point is, so one way or the other, whether we're talking about that they're trying to extort money, whether we're talking about they're trying to extort money from a person, whether we're talking about they're trying to extort money, and so if you swear to them that such and such is not mine, or that it's hektish or whatever, then they will respect that and they'll leave you alone. Or even if we're not talking about money, same idea. In other words, maybe that they would demand that you swear to such and such, and if not, then they're going to threaten to kill. So you're allowed to make such a neder to them, and it's considered Nidrei Oinsin, and as we're going to see in the Gemara, therefore you're not actually osur in whatever it is that you swore to them, to whatever it is that you made the neder to them. So we see, by the way, I mean, at least according to the Mefarish and Tosfos that mentioned this point about at least according to the Ran, who mentions that these are Jewish listim, the implication is these are people who, on the one hand, they have no problem killing, even though that's also min haTorah, but they do respect, for example, the fact that something is truma. So, you know, you have nowadays also, you have such kinds of people, you know, they would never eat anything that there's a shayla on the kashrus of it, but when it comes to kashrus of money, is a little bit different. So unfortunately, you have such people. So now again, so you're faced with such a person, then you make a neder to them. So as the Mishnah is going to go on to say, such a thing is an example of Nidrei Oinsin, and you're not actually over on the neder when later on you go after you're safe, you go and eat the thing that it is that you made the neder is also to you or whatever. That's Nidrei Oinsin. Similarly for Charomim, towards Charomim, which is the Ran defines machrimin v'sholalin. These are people who destroy, or who machrimin v'pashas maybe doesn't mean destroy. It means like they expropriate, they grab, and they plunder. So here we're talking about they don't go as far as killing, but they'll steal and rob from people. Same idea, in other words, that you might be able to evade paying them by claiming that such and such is not yours, that it belongs to the king or whatever. Or there are actually Mefarshim who understand that it means that you yourself are claiming to belong to the king's household, and then the guy is afraid and he'll leave you alone. Anyway, v'la mochsin, and also as far as tax collectors, when they're demanding a certain tax or tariff or whatever, and you're trying to evade it, So we'll see in the Gemara, are you allowed to evade taxes? We're going to get into that. But first, we're talking about, first, in terms of Nedarim, we're saying for all those purposes, if a person makes a neder, it's considered Nidrei Oinsin, and therefore he's not bound by it. So for example, you could make a neder to them, Shehi Truma. For example, you could be telling them that this fruit, this produce that you see over here, which you want to grab, is Truma. Even though it's not truma, you're allowed to make such a neder. And again, the idea being that the Rosh says, even though these are people who kill or steal, they still won't eat something that's usur. Or Tosfos and the Rosh give a couple of other possibilities. If these guys are, if these guys are killers, why would they respect the fact that you're saying it's Truma? Wouldn't they grab it anyway? So the Rosh mentions a point that they're going to think to themselves, you know what, if it's Truma, it's worth a lot less than regular produce anyway. In fact, we can do the same amount of money. We'll buy us a smaller amount of regular produce or a much larger amount of Truma. Since Truma, you have rules about it. Only Kohenim can eat it, only when they're Tahor. Therefore, it sells very cheaply. So therefore, once you tell them it's Truma, they may figure it's not worth their bother. Tosfos says another point as well. At least when it comes to the tax collectors, maybe in fact they wouldn't demand taxes from people who regularly give truma to Kohenim. So if you tell them that this is truma, then they're going to figure, okay, well then you're an exception to the rule. We're not going to demand taxes from you. Anyway, so you can claim that it's truma even though it's really not. Similarly, you could claim to the harogim or whatever that this fruit actually belongs to the king, even though it doesn't really. So such things are called nidrei oinsin. And again, when we say shehen shal beis hamelach, that could mean that you're saying that the fruit you're claiming belongs to the beis hamelach, or it could be that you're claiming that you yourself are part of beis hamelach, that you yourself are part of the royal retinue, and that way they'd be afraid to start up with you. Anyway, the Mishnah continues. Beis Shammai emin bakol nedrin. Now, Beis Shammai says, now you are allowed, Beis Shammai agrees with the basic concept that you are allowed to make such nedarim. And by the way, the Mefarish points out that the Mishnah is phrased in one of these loizu afzu ways. Not only this, but even the greater chiddush this. Not only harogin, where the person's life is in danger, but even haromim, where it's not, then you're allowed to do this. And not only haromim, but even mochsin, where they're only demanding a certain amount of taxes, where after all, as the Gemara is going to say, you know, this is, we are talking about taxes that are being regularly collected. Nevertheless, and we'll see in the Gemara in that case, in what case you're allowed to evade them. But anyway, even then you're allowed to use this dodge of making a neder so that they'll leave you alone. So now, Beis Shammai says, so you're telling them, for example, that this fruit is truma, therefore they won't take it, either because, as the Rosh and Tosfos says, they may be killers, they may be horrible people, but they're going to be careful not to eat something that's osir, and they know they're zorim, they can't eat truma, or because even if they don't care about such things, they're going to realize that truma is not really worth their while. Because it's cheaper than regular food anyhow.
And they won't take something else instead.
So that's apparently the idea is. In other words, like, yeah, they won't take something else. So let's say that they only see this pile of grain of yours and you tell them it's truma. Yeah. So the Mishnah continues, Beis Shammai Emim. So Beis Shammai says, sure, we agree with the basic concept of Nodrin, la Haramim, and so. But Bakol Nodrin, they say it's true you can make any such kind of neder. To get out of the harogim and so forth, chutz mi b'shvua, with the exception of you're not allowed to take a shvua for that purpose. So, for example, you could take a neder, as the Gemara is going to explain soon. Let's say, for example, say that certain that all the peiros in the world, or many different kinds of peiros, will be also to me if what I'm saying is not true. And you won't be bound by that because nidrei oinsin. However, Beis Shammai says you can't use a shvua for that purpose because, after all, a shvua is more serious. Because we've said several times in the Masechta, a shvua, it says lo yinakeh, that Hashem will not cleanse a person who swears falsely. So a shvua is more serious than a neder. So again, Beis Shammai would say, faced with a horeg or chorom or whatever, these three kinds of criminals that we're talking about in the Mishnah. A person could say, now you could say, for example, you tell the horog, don't take this fruit, it's truma, and the guy says, well, how do I know that's true? So you say, or maybe the guy tells you, well, then make a neder that all peiros in the world will be also to you if what you're saying is not true. So Beis Shammai says, fine, that you can do. And then you're not bound by that neder later on. Right. However, to say a shvur, to say, I swear that these payers are truma, that Beis Shammai says you can't do.
So if the guy's a learned person,
then you might be in trouble, yes. Or Beis Hillel Oymim, after shvur. Beis Hillel says you're even allowed to make a shvur for that. You're even allowed to make a shvur for that purpose. Which within that you have different Rishonim understand. Does that mean that he makes a shvur that this object, that this food is truma, or shvur saying I will be also to do such and such if this is not truma? Whatever the case, Beis Shammai says you can't do those, and Beis Hillel says you could. Another machlokes, Beis Shammai omim lo yiftach loy beneder. Beis Shammai says you can't initiate the neder. So if the guy is trying to grab your produce, your pile of grain or something, and he tells you, so he tells you, I'm about to take it, and you say, don't, it's truma. And he says, well then make a neder to me that all peiros will be also to you if this is not truma. Then Beis Shammai agrees you're allowed to make such a neder. But if you initiate it yourself, you say, don't take it. And if this is not truma, then I'm making a neder that all the peiros will be also to me. Then Beis Shammai says, then that neder would actually be in effect. Beis Hillel says that even you're allowed to initiate it yourself. You don't have to wait for the listim. You don't have to wait for the robber himself to initiate that conversation. Another one, Beis Shammai says you can you can be mutter afterwards in whatever it is that the criminal made you make the neder on. So even in other words, again, Beis Shammai is saying you can't initiate it. It has to be the other guy, the listim initiates it. Then let's say, for example, imagine that he says, look, if I want to take you at your word that this is truma, then make a neder to me that all peiros will be also to you if this is not truma. So now Beis Shammai is saying that what if you were to say not only all peiros, but all meat will also be also to me? Well, what happens as far as the meat? Beis Shammai says you initiated that on your own. Therefore, the part about the meat is going to be in effect. We're talking about one who at least is going to respect the fact that this is truma and not eat it. Or even if not, he realizes that truma is cheaper than cholin and he's not going to bother with it. Yeah.
In those days, even
the ganavim were more frum. Yeah. I mean, you have the famous expression, ganva pumachtau to rachmona kaya, right? The ganav davens to Hashem to be successful before he starts breaking into the house. So yeah, I was mentioning before, I mean, it's not just in those days. Sometimes you have nowadays also people who are very careful about kosher food, but not quite as careful about kosher to money, you know? So yeah, anyway, so Beis Shammai is saying that, let's say, for example, again, he said, then make a neder that such and such peiros will be also to you. And you say, not only peiros, I'll even make a neder that all meat will be also to me. So then Beis Shammai says, the part about the meat is in effect, because he didn't make you say that. Or Beis Hillel Oimim, after Masha Enim Adira. Beis Hillel says, even what he didn't make you make a neder, that is also included because it was all under oinus.
And therefore
later on you'll be allowed to eat the peiros and you're allowed to eat the meat and whatever, and there's no problem with it. Which, by the way, Mefoshim talk about exactly, Achronim talk about how exactly, I mean, we learned before already that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue about neder shehucha mitzase hucha kuloi, about a part of a neder is mutter than the rest of it is mutter. So why do we need this machlokes to see you again? So one point is we can say in a case where we're talking about like this, the part about the fruit is not even really considered a neder at all because the other guy made you take that neder. So therefore, you can't say that now when the fruit is mutter, automatically maybe you should say the meat is mutter because neder shehucha mitzase hucha kuloi, that was never included in the neder in the first place. Previously, we had, let's say, for example, you see a bunch of people in the distance, you make a neder that's fruit is also to all of you, then you realize your father is among them, and you say, except for my father, or whatever loshonus that we learned over there in the machlokas of Rabba and Rava. But over here, it would be almost the other way around. If you were to say, my father is mutter and the rest of you are also, there's no question, the rest of you are also. So here, the same kind of, because then he was never included in the neder in the first place, the same way the argument is, I think Karen Ora brings this, which is the Shagas, which is a Pirush from the Shagas Arya, that he says that in this case, the meat was never included in the neder in the first place because the fact that you said it was only under oinus, and therefore, we can't talk about neder shehucha mitzase hucha kuloi. So it's a separate machlokas Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. Anyway, so the Gemara says ketzad. What's an example of this kind of thing of a masha enim adirai? Omar loy. Suppose that the criminal says to the guy, say emor, say as follows, koinam ishti nenesli, a koinam that my wife will be also to have anah from me if what I'm saying is not true. But Omar, and the victim says, koinam ishti uvonai nenesli, and he says, not only my wife, even my children will be also to have anah from me. So b'shamayim ishti muteres ubonam asurin. So now, but Shama says the wife will tackle the mutter because that was Nidre Onsin. But the children that he added voluntarily, so to speak, voluntarily, is not Nidre Onsin. And therefore, the children would be Osir, or Besilim Eleva Elam Mutar. And Besil says all of them will be mutter. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. The Rosh, by the way, mentions a point. He says, now the chiddush of Bes Shammai's last din, like this, they're saying poseach loy, that you can't even initiate it. It has to be that the criminal himself initiates it. So when he's initiating and saying, swear to me, then he's going to be mutter. But the point is that even when the point is, but Shammai is saying, even within that, you can't add to it.
So also you said you can add to it?
That's the best Shammai is saying both, that you can't start, you can't initiate the whole thing yourself, and you can't add to it. Right. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Now, with the Harogin and the Haromim, the people who are killing or the people who are stealing, we understand why you would want to make a false neder in order to save yourself from them. But the moichsin, we said tax collectors, doesn't Shmuel say that the din of the king is a din? Meaning, in other words, when you live under the power of a king, he has the right to pass laws, including to collect X amount of taxes, and you have to follow that. You're not allowed to evade, you're not allowed to dodge taxes from him. So why is the Mishnah telling us the dinim of a neder for such people when you're not allowed to evade the taxes in the first place? So the Gemara answers, Omer of Chinina, Omer of Kahana, Omer Shmuel, b'moiches she'en le'kitzva. The first answer is we're talking about a tax collector who doesn't collect with a fixed amount. You have to realize the way taxes were done in those days wasn't like nowadays. You fill out your own tax return and you send it off to the IRS and they do whatever they do with it. The way it worked in those days was usually a king would, it was called tax farming. A king would decide a certain country, we need to collect X amount of taxes from it. He would appoint people. Usually, they would buy the position where they would tell the king, "We will collect X amount of taxes from this country for you, and whatever extra they collected, they'd keep for themselves." So it was a very lucrative thing, which is why people would pay lots of money for it. The point is, in other words, the Gemara usually assumes that tax collectors like that are dishonest. They collect more than they're required to. The king wants only $1 million from this place. He's collecting 2 million, and he's not taking care to collect more from the rich and less from the poor or whatever in accordance with people's means. He just grabs whatever he can, figuring I'll give the king his million, and then whatever else I get, I can enrich myself. So the Gemara generally assumes throughout Shas that moichsim are corrupt or corrupt and thieves. So here we're talking about the moichs shein le kitzva. There's no fixed amount that he's collecting. Whatever he wants, he collects. So therefore, that's not dini d'machos adini anymore. And Dvei Rabbi Yanai Amar, and in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yanai, they gave a different answer. We're talking about a person who set himself up as a tax collector. So he didn't even go to the king to buy the rights of taxation from him. He decided on his own, I'm going to go around with my bodyguards or whatever and start demanding taxes from people. And later on, I'll go pay the king his amount. But either way, the point is that's not dinah d'malchus adinah. This whole concept of dinah d'malchus adinah, by the way, there is an enormous amount that's been discussed about it in the Gemara and Rishonim and Achronim. One interesting point that Ran mentions over here, he brings from a Tosfos elsewhere, that says this concept of dinah d'malchus adinah applies only to a goyish king. B'chlan, we have to ask, what is the basis of the concept of dinah d'malchus adinah? This concept that we're saying that a king has the right to pass laws and everybody has to follow them, what's the basis of that? So there's a few different explanations among Rishonim. The Rashbam in Baba Basra says because you accepted his kingship on yourself, and that includes that because you're voluntarily living in this place, therefore it comes out that you, therefore in effect, you're accepting his laws on you. So now the Rani brings an idea from Tosfos over here that the land belongs to the king. So if you don't follow his laws, he has the ability to say, get out of here. Meanwhile, he says then Eretz Yisrael under a Jewish king would not be like that, because a Jewish king has no right to expel people from Eretz Yisrael. Every Jew has their portion in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, Dina de Machos Adina would not necessarily apply to that. Shlomo collected taxes. So there is an enormous amount of discussion about that, and not everybody agrees with that distinction that Tosfos is making. First of all, even if we accept that distinction, it may mean only that if the king is levying a tax on the people, then you would be able to evade it, and it's not a problem of dinu de malchus adina. However, there would still be he has the right to demand those taxes, and if you pay it to him, so much the better. He just doesn't have the right to say, if you're evading it, then you're stealing from me and you're violating dinu de malchus adina. But there is more discussion about it. There is also now, there's a parashas HaMelech in Sefer Shmuel, when the Jewish people ask Shmuel for a king, then he warns them about all the consequences that are going to happen if they have a king, and he tells them all kinds of things. The king will have the right to collect taxes and to draft your sons into his army, and so on and so forth. And the Gemara has a machlokas in Sanhedrin, is that he's telling them these are the actual halachas. A king is actually allowed to do such things up yalocha, or is he telling them it may not be up yalocha, but practically speaking, kings are like that. They're tyrants and they do whatever they feel like. So that will affect the question, what does it mean? In other words, when we say the king is collecting taxes, is it that he has a right to do so up yalocha, or is it practically speaking, he's got the army backing him up and you're not gonna get very far trying to get around for that. Anyway, so there is a lot of discussion about that. There's also a lot of discussion among the Shach, for example, brings up a point, and earlier poskim also do, about the question, what is the scope of Dina de Machos Adina? Does it only include things that are for the benefit of the king himself? For example, that he passes laws that the X amount should be collected in taxes or whatever, where he needs it for his treasury, or does it apply to other kinds of laws as well that kings or governors make in order that society should function well? Does Dina de Machos Adina apply to those? Does it apply, for example, when they have their own laws of Dini Mominus that are not always the same as our laws of the Torah? And so forth. There's an enormous amount of discussion about the ins and outs of Dina de Machos Adina. But for purposes of what we're saying over here, again, if we're talking about a legitimate tax collector, then there's no question about making a neder, false neder to him, because you're not allowed to dodge the taxes anyhow. So we're talking about, as the Gemara is saying over here, that it's an illegitimate tax collector, therefore you're allowed to try to evade it. One interesting thing worth mentioning in that regard is in Shulchan Aruch it brings that even, let's say, now you know, in earlier times it was fairly common, unfortunately, that there were governments that would charge Jews higher taxes than goyim. Is that considered a tax under Dina de Machos Adina? In Shulchan Aruch it says yes, because the fact that all Jews are having to pay the same amount, that makes it a legal tax according to Dina de Machos Adina. It may be very discriminatory and very disgusting of them to do it, but you can't say that that's the kind of tax that you're allowed to evade. If it was more on some people and less than others unfairly, then yes, we would say that's not Dina de Machos Adina.
That was a fact
in those times. You had very often Jews were charged higher taxes and tolls and all kinds of things than goyim. Yeah. And then Shulchan Aruch says you have to pay it, and you're not allowed to evade such taxes. Yeah.
Whether or not it's Dina de Machos Adina, as long as you have tax collectors who are making illegal money, isn't that enough?
Well, so that's what we're saying. So if that's what the Gemara is saying over here, if you have illegal tax collectors, either they're collecting more than what the king. Than what the king authorized them to, or if they're just oymen me'elav, then yes, then you're allowed to evade whatever taxes you can of theirs, because and that's what the Mishnah is talking about. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. One other thing, there is further discussion about that in Shulchan Aruch. Actually, is there a difference if the tax collector himself is a Jew or a goy? Maybe if there's a Jew, there's more of an issue evading his taxes than there is if there's a goy, because the Gemara discusses in Bava Kamma. The Ran mentions it over here, although it was censored in most editions. You can find it in the notes in newer Gemaras. That there is a difference between you're not allowed to cheat a goy, for example, but you are allowed to do what's called hafkas halva'asai, for example, that you owe money to a goy. Then there's the, under certain cases in halacha, you're allowed to evade paying that, because you're not actually taking away something from him. So that will also affect over here. If the tax collector is a Jew versus a goy, and you're evading paying in taxes, then that it's going to affect that as well. That if he's a yid, you have more of a problem with it because you're not only not allowed to take something from him, you're not allowed to avoid paying a fellow yid what you owe him. So
especially if he got paid by
Okay. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Shehen shall beis hamelach b'afbi shehen shall beis hamelach. So we said another example is that you might swear to the harogim or whatever that this fruit belongs to the king's palace when really it doesn't.
So harogim,
harogim meant killers. So we said in the Mishnah, the Ran just said that they're stam killers. In other words, not even a matter of money. And then we said the Mefarish and Tosfos understand that it's a matter of money, that they're threatening, you give us X amount of money or we'll kill you. Anyway, so we said one possibility is you swear to them that this produce that you want to take belongs to the king, even though it really doesn't. So the Gemara asks, Heichi Nader, what exactly is the nature of the neder that he said? After all, a neder is that you're saying that something is usur. A neder is not this is or this isn't. So in other words, the problem is not on the halacha. The problem is just on the lashon of the Mishnah. How are you calling it a neder? What do you mean a neder that this is truma or a neder that this belongs to the king? That's not a neder. That's a shvur.
Worse.
Okay. Well, according to Bishama, it's worse. But in any case, the point is that that's not the definition of a neder. That's how the Ran learns the question. And then the Rosh explains the question is that what kind of neder are you going to be able to make and not be over on your neder later on? So how exactly do you do it? How exactly do you formulate this neder such that later on when you're over on it, it's not considered being over? So the answer is Omer of Amram, Omer Rab, but Omer, the case is the person says, Ye osru peiras ha'olam alai, let the peiras of the world be osru to me, im einan shal beis hamelech. If this fruit that you want to take does not belong to the king. So the Gemara asks, in that case, that would be a neder. Kiven de Omer ye osru, when he says it should be osru, itzura lai kol peire alma. Then aren't all the fruit in the world also to him? So what are we saying that now he's able to be over on that neder and there's no problem with it? By the way, earlier in the Masechta, there is an opinion of Rabbi Tam that says Bechlal, if a person makes a neder on all peiros ha'olam, that would be considered nidre havai. That would be considered an exaggerated neder because a person is not going to be able to live without any peiros. Keep in mind that in the Gemara terminology, peiros doesn't just mean fruits like what you eat in a fruit salad. It also means grain. It also means produce of the ground. So we're talking about he doesn't mean literally all the peiros. Whatever he says, he mentions specific peiros. Anyway,
what's a grown tree?
Whatever. So the answer is, the answer is, he says they should be also to me today. Well, then tomorrow they'll be mutter. Well, the question is, well, then the moichis or whatever criminal we're talking about is not stupid. He's gonna realize that. He's not going to accept that. The answer is, what it is the person thinks in his mind that this issur that I'm taking on myself should be in effect only for today. But he doesn't say that outward. He doesn't say that. So he says to the criminal, meanwhile, in his heart, he's thinking that it should be only for today. And there are other examples that Amnon gives an example. Let's say that he could be having in mind, let's say, suppose it wasn't peiros, suppose it wasn't meat, then he could be having in mind that he's not going to eat chazer flesh, which of course he's not going to anyway. But the point is the guy doesn't know what he's thinking and therefore that will be fine. He's saying the words, it'll be also to me, but we're understanding. So now usually we say dvorim shabalev enim dvorim. But the reason why it works over here is because basically a non-sadi, we are edus, that he doesn't mean to make the neder fully sincerely, that he's only doing it he's only doing it under duress, and therefore anybody would do that in that case, and therefore it's not considered dvarim shabalev enim dvarim, it actually undoes the neder. So that's the thing. Even though we usually hold that dvarim shabalev enim dvarim, so a person says something and he's thinking something that would modify or cancel that, we ignore what he's thinking. Legabe oinsin shiny, but when it comes to oinus, is it different? Because it's different because there's no other way to do it. So the Chachamim are telling us, therefore, that such a thing, therefore, it's not considered a valid method. Now, what it is, on the other hand, the Ran does point out, if let's say, He mentioned something else also, that you have, let's say, for example, you can have a case where a person intended to make a neder that he won't eat wheat bread, and he accidentally said bread. Then we say that he didn't mean to say wheat, and just he tripped up, and he forgot to mention that detail. So therefore, he's only also in wheat bread. Here we're saying that it's not that he meant to leave anything out. Well, he did mean to leave it out. So there we're talking about he didn't mean to leave it out. He accidentally just said bread when he meant to say wheat bread. Here we're talking about where he says, I'm also in such and such. And he's thinking to himself, it means only today. And we're saying that because of the onus, then therefore that is in effect.
What's wheat bread?
Wheat bread as opposed to barley bread, let's say.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's the story. Then that usually in this special case, because of the onus, then we allow it. The Mishnah continued. Bishama and Bakolchul, Bishama and Mashu Madiroi. Then we had the various machloikasin of Bishama and Bishilul about this, where one thing is Bishama says that only if he himself said that he has to initiate it, not you, and it can only be exactly what he asked, what he told you to be no doing, not if you added something else. Or Bishilul after Shane and Madiroi, and Bishilul said, even you added something else on your own. Kate said, Omale Konim Ishti Nanisli, Omale Konim Ishti Uvane Nanamli. For example, the criminal says, make a neder that your wife will be also to have anah from you, and he adds the children as well. So the Gemara says, now we learn in a braisa more detail about that. Beshama says you cannot initiate the thing with a shvua. We said in the Mishnah that Beshama says chutz mi b'shvua. So now the braisa says you can't initiate with a shvua. Or Bishilul says you can even initiate by saying, I'm willing to take a shavua, that's such and such. So the Gemara asks, so you're telling me that according to Bishamai, you're not allowed to initiate with a shavua, but you're allowed to initiate with a neder? Well, it's not. Bishamai lo yiftach lo neder, but we learned in the Mishnah. Bishamai says you can't initiate anything at all, even a neder. And further, what is the braisa telling us? You're not allowed to initiate by mentioning a shvua. Does that imply homedo nader b'shvua? But if he initiates it, then you are allowed to take a shvua. So what's going on over here? In the Mishnah, Bishama is saying you can't do a shvua at all, and even a neder you can't initiate. The braisa seems to be saying the only thing you can't. So in other words, according to the Bishama in the Mishnah, there are 3 out of 4 things you can't do. You can't take a shvua when you're initiating it. You can't take a shvua when he's initiating it. You can't take a neder when you're initiating it. The only thing you could do is a neder when he's initiating it. Whereas in the braisa, it seems to be the other way around. The only thing that's also is for you to initiate a shvua. Anything else, him initiating a shvua, or you initiating a neder, or him initiating a neder, sounds like, according to the braisa, Beis Shammai would say it's fine. So what's going on? The answer is both braises are telling us the same thing, but they're telling us different chidushim. Tana masnisin b'neder lo'idiach ha'koichan de b'shamai. Our Mishnah mentions that b'shamai says you're not allowed to initiate with a neder, not to say that the Mishnah is not even talking about a shvua, lo'idiach ha'koichan de b'shamai. To tell you how far b'shamai is going in being machmer, that they're saying not only are you not allowed to initiate with a shvua, which is more serious, but not even with a neder, even though a neder is more lenient. Tana braisa b'shvua. Then on the other hand, the braisa mentions initiating a shvua lo'idiach ha'koichan de b'shilol, to tell you how far b'shilol is going. So in being meikol. Now we usually say koicha de hetera odif. Usually when the Tana has an option to highlight how far the machmir goes or how far the meikol goes, we usually say the Tana would prefer to highlight how far the meikol goes. Rashi explains at the beginning of Beitza, because when a person is machmir, it's not necessarily because he's certain of his opinion. Could be because it's a suffix and therefore he's machmir. Whereas when a person says something is mutter, he knows for sure that it's mutter. So therefore, usually the Mishnah would like to highlight how much the one who's meikol goes in his meikol. Here, on the other hand, the point is that since we have the braisa that since we have the Braisa that tells us otherwise, then the Mishnah can rely on the Braisa. Then the Mishnah can rely on the Braisa to tell us to tell us what the actual thing is. So it can tell us, it can act as though Bishama is Machmur and only allows the one out of four things only to initiate a neder, but it can rely on the Braisa, which will tell us about a Shavua. And from that, it becomes clear that Bishama just doesn't allow you to initiate, but when it comes to the criminal initiating it, then either a neder or Shavua is fine. According to Bishama. According to Bishama, all four of them are mutter. According to Bishamai, only when the other guy initiates it, even a shur. That's the point. So the Mishnah didn't mention that point because relying on the Braisa to tell us that. That's the Chiddush. That's why we have the Mishnah versus the Braisa, right? Right. That's the Rosh explains that point, yeah. So the Mishnah tellsus how far Bishamai is going. The Braisa tells us how far Bishillel is going, that according to Bishillel, all four possibilities are mutter. Rav Ashi Yom HaHochi Katani. Rav Ashi says that's not actually what the Braisa is telling us anyway. The Braisa is not really talking about a case of Oinsin anymore. Now the Braisa is saying a different thing. Bishamai says that if you made a Shavua, you're not allowed to be Matur Neder on it afterwards. And Bishillel says there is. So in other words, Ein Poischin B'Shavua does not mean initiating as in when we're talking about when a person is faced with a criminal. Rather, we're talking about in poiskin, when a person comes to Beis Din with a shvua, they cannot be poiseach for him, they cannot initiate for him to be matu that shvua. Now, the Ran earlier in the Perek and the Rosh over here explained that that would only be midrabbanan. But Shammai agrees that a shvua, you're allowed to be matu midarais. They just say that midrabbanan, then they shouldn't do it.
That's the reason they don't want people to make
And they don't want people to make shvuas, because a shvua is a more serious thing. It usually includes the name of Hashem, and we said lo yinakeh. The Rambam actually has a different understanding of it. He understands here, and actually in a number of other places in the Masechta, when we talk about being preseach for a neder, he learns that there's a difference whether Beis Din is trying to get the guy to be matur his neder versus where he himself comes voluntarily to Beis Din to be matur neder. So the Rambam understands then that ein poischin b'shvua, that ein she'ela, the expression ein she'ela b'shvua, just means, in other words, that according to Beis Shammai, if the person himself does not have any intention of being matur shvua, and Beis Din is trying to pressure him into it, they can't do that with a shvua, says Beis Shammai. But if he himself comes to Beis Din and says, you know, I made this shvua and now I regret it, then sure, they can be matur shvua even according to Beis Shammai. By the way, going back before we were talking about the person makes the neder to the horeg or whatever, and he says, for example, that I will be also in Paris, and he thinks in his mind that it means today. The Ran also adds, though, that if he were to explicitly say something, then even though he is thinking differently in his mind, it won't work. If he were to explicitly say that these payers should be also to me forever, for example, then even though he's thinking in his mind that he doesn't mean forever, he only means today, that wouldn't work. According to everybody, because the fact is, then we say he actually said Mele. If he just says they're also without specifying, then he can think in his mind an extra detail that he didn't mention, namely that it's only today and fine. But if he actually explicitly says, for example, they should be also to me forever, or they should be also to me for a year, then yes, we're not going to say that because he's thinking in his mind that it was only for today, then it should only be for today. Then we're going to have to talk about whether it's in effect for the whole year.
Sounded that's steered to the whole Gemara this month.
No, so the fact is, we're saying Nidrei Oinsin are mutter, but we're saying you still have to formulate the Nidrei Oinsin carefully enough that you're not actually taking on a real neder. In other words, to the extent the Chachamim are telling you that under these circumstances, you're allowed to break the neder because you're only doing it in the first place under duress, you still have to be careful to state the neder in a way that you're not actually that you're not actually taking a full-fledged neder. So for example, again, you say, Paris should be also to me, and then you're thinking in your mind only today, or only Paris that I wasn't planning to eat anyway, that's one thing. But if you were to say something and your mind is thinking something else, that wouldn't necessarily work, says the Ram.
So before the next door, you got to start thinking what the halachas
are. So you got to start knowing what the halachas are, yeah. And again, I guess like you were saying, if these harogim or whatever are lamdonim themselves and they know this piece of Gemara, then you might be in trouble, yeah. Okay.
What do you think in your mind?
Yeah, okay. Onward. Now this next mission, so now we're done with the Arba Nedarim, which was the beginning of our parak about the four types of Nedarim that Hitiru Chachamim. So now we're going on to a new topic. So there are the Rosh explains that this next Mishnah is actually going to be talking about sort of a case of onus as well. Then there's a different explanation that it's more like nidre zeruzin, like we said earlier, a neder where you're just saying in order to strengthen what you're saying, but not that you sincerely mean it. Anyway, the Mishnah says, harin tia sa'elu korban, suppose a person says, these plants should be korban, and the Ram says there are two possibilities what that means. It can either mean that he's saying they're also to him like a korban, which is a classic form of a neder, or it means that he's saying that he's going to take the value of them and use it to bring a korban. Anyway, so he says that they should be korban im einon niktzotzis, if they're not chopped down. Now, why would you be talking about them being chopped down? The Gemara is going to talk about that there's a tremendous hurricane going on, and you figure these plants are never going to survive that hurricane. Realistically, by the end of today, they're going to be chopped off and they're going to be lying on the ground. So therefore, so you're saying a net. So again, one way of understanding it is this is a form of nidre onsin, that he's thinking to himself, it's impossible that these plants are going to survive this hurricane. And he's making a neder along those lines. And now what happens if, in fact, they do survive the hurricane? So we can say that might be considered nidre onsin. Therefore it wouldn't be a neder. On the other hand, so again, the Gemara is going to talk about, let's say, for example, there was a tremendous windstorm. So now you see these plants that are outside your house, and you're thinking to yourself, realistically, these plants are never going to survive the storm. By the time the day ends, they're going to be flat on the ground. Therefore, he says a neder. That they're going to be, that again, either that they're going to be also to me like a korban, or that I'm going to take the value of them and use it to buy a korban, whatever. It was a form of nidre, according to the Rosh, it's a form of nidre oinsin, because he was thinking realistically, it's not going to happen. It is going to end up getting uprooted from the ground. He wants to either declare that they are also to him like a korban, meaning he's also to have anah from them, or he wants to declare that the value of them, he's going to sell the wood of them and use them to buy a korban. The Ran gives two explanations of it.
Even though he sees that it's going to be a disaster.
So it's not going to be worth nothing. I mean, the wood is worth something. So one way of understanding is nidre oinsin. Another way of understanding that some of Foshim say, the Shittim Kubetzis brings, that it may be considered nidre zeruzin. It may be like more like he's saying, you look at that storm, those trees are definitely going to fall down. And I'm making a neder to back up what I'm saying. So it'd be like the nedarim that we talked about earlier in the parak, where a person says, for example, I'm making a neder that I won't sell this for less than four. I'm making a neder that such and such will be also to me if I sell this for less than four zuzim. Where again, he's not sincerely meaning that he won't sell it for less. He's using that to strengthen what he's saying.
Not following. He's got trees. Unless he's got fruit trees. All the fruits are going to get destroyed because of the
right.
So he's making a neder.
So he's making a neder that if he's saying that if by the end of today that if by the end of today these plants are not destroyed, then I will declare them a korban. Then I will declare them that they are also, that they're off limits to me as a neder, or that I will sell the fruit or the wood or whatever from them and use it to buy a curb. Similarly, talus zu korbanim enin asrefes. Similarly, for example, if a fire breaks out and he says, realistically, this talus is never going to survive that fire. It's going to get burnt. If somehow it happens that it gets saved from the fire, talus zu korbanim enin asrefes, then this talus will be considered a korban if it doesn't get burnt. Again, meaning either he's saying, if it doesn't get burnt, if it survives the fire, then I'm making a neder in advance that the talus will be off limits to me, or that I will sell the talus and use it to buy a korban. Either way, the Mishnah says, yesh lahen pidyon, you are, the neder is in effect, but you can be poided. Now we're going to talk about in the next parak that the concept that to a certain extent, when a person says that something is also as a koinam, given that we said earlier in the Masech that koinam is a loshen, meaning really that you're comparing this to a korban, it has a degree of kedusha to the extent that if a person uses it, then he's over on the mitzvah of me'ilah. So therefore, we can talk about pidyon, and we can talk about buying it back from hekdesh, so to speak. It's like as if he made it a hekdesh, but it's his own personal hekdesh, and therefore now he has to buy it back from hekdesh. So the point is, the neder is in effect, but you can buy them back, and you can make it that now they're no longer awesome to you. So in the case of koinam, but pashtus, it would mean that you matter neder on it. But the Gemara is actually going to explain why it uses the expression yesh lahen pidyon rather than just saying kedushas. Why does it say they have kedusha? So we'll see that in the Gemara.
This is a way of him taking advantage of the storm?
Not really taking advantage of the storm. He's saying, realistically, by the end of the storm, these trees are going to be knocked down. But if somehow they're not, if somehow they survive the storm, then I'm declaring them hekdesh. And then I'm declaring them under a net.
I don't see why he should not do that. If she does survive, so he realizes that there's a possibility it'll survive, so then it belongs to Hashem. It's like, how do you go back on that word?
Well, that's the thing. In other words, he was expecting, realistically, that's the Rosh explains that
he's not
gaining anything. So here.
Because he's saying that this is hectic.
Well, first of all, he's not really saying hectic. According to one opinion, according to one explanation in the Ran, he's saying it will be also with a neder. It'll be a koinam, like all the koinamos, all the nedarim that we've been talking about so far. So in other words, so the Rosh explains, it's like nidresh shgogos. He was makdish them, meaning he was declaring them under a neder, thinking it's impossible that they're going to survive. So therefore, he didn't sincerely mean to declare them hektish. It was more like nidre oinsin. Or actually, he uses the expression nidresh shgogos. It's more like an inadvertent neder, not really oinsin. Nidresh shgogos, rather, that we learned earlier in the parak, where we said, for example, imagine a person says, if I didn't eat earlier today, then such and such should be also to me. And later on, he remembers that he actually didn't eat earlier today, or he did, as the case may be, whatever. So the same way over here. In other words, he didn't fully mean to be makdish then. So we say yesh lahen pidyon, then he is able to be poyda then. Meaning, in other words, that the neder is in effect, but we are able to undo it later. On the other hand, the Mishnah contrasts harein atiyasa elu korban ad shi yikotzu. On the other hand, if he says these plants will be a korban until they're chopped down, meaning, in other words, from now until they're chopped down, they're going to be considered korban, and then once they're chopped down, then they're not. Or talus is korban ad shebisarif, or this talus will be considered korban until it's burnt. Then the Mishnah says ein lahem pidyon. Then there is no way of being poyed to them, and we're going to discuss in the Gemara tomorrow what actually happens with them. If you can't be poyed to them, what exactly do you do with them? Okay. The problem with it is the problem with it is essentially that. So what are you saying? It's going to be kodesh until it's chopped down. Well, as soon as it's chopped down, then it loses its dusha. But at that point, you can't be koydish anymore. So that's what we're going to discuss in the Gemara tomorrow. What actually happens with them? So the Ran explains over here. If you're talking about that, he said korban in the sense that he's going to use the value of them for the korban. Then yesh lahem pidyon means that now you do that. You take that money and you use it towards a korban. If you say that means koinam, then it means that. So then the Ran explains that it we're fault that according to that, if we say that we're talking about a koinam, then we're talking about according to the opinion of Reb Meir, which is in the next perek, that we're going to say that he's going to say this concept of me'ila applies to nedarim. So therefore, in other words, if he now eats it, then he's going to be chayiv for me'ila. Therefore that would be what the so those are the two possibilities what the Mishnah means by pidyon. Either we're talking about that he was makdish, that the value of it is going to go towards a korban, then yesh lahem pidyon, and then you're able to be poyed to them and use that money towards the korban, or it means that the neder applies, and if a person now were to use that object, then he's committing me'ilah. So the Gemara asks, "Velisni kedoshes." Why is the Mishnah talking about pidyon, or in the Reisha, why is it talking about yeshlam pidyon? Velisni kedoshes. Why does the Mishnah use the word kedoshes? They have holiness, meaning, in other words, either the value of them is reserved for a korban, like he said, or that they become also as a koinam. So why does the Mishnah use the word kedoshes? Or the ein kedoshes, and the Mishnah should say in the sefer that they're not kodesh. Now the Ran says that really we shouldn't have the words Va'ein and Kedoshis, because he says that that maybe would work according to one of the explanations that we said. But if we say, what would be the point of saying Einam Kedoshis? What would be the point of saying they have no Kedusha if the point is we're trying to establish that they do have Kedusha? So the Rambam says the correct Gersa should just be Velisni Kedoshis, that the Mishnah should just say that they are Kodesh. But there are other Mephoshim who say that. So the Rambam, in other words, is saying the Gemara is not asking on the Sefer, because in the Sefer, sure, we have to say Ein Lehem Pidyon for reasons that we're going to explain later. But the Reisha, why is it saying the word Yesh Lehem Pidyon rather than saying Kedoshas? And then there are other Mephoshim who justify the Girsa that we have in front of us in the Gemara. Anyway, the Gemara answers, I need to boil a mist in the Sefer, Ein Lehem Pidyon, because in the Sefer, we have to use the words Ein Lehem Pidyon, and there we have to say it that way. We have to say, as we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow, that there's no way of being poyder these things, because they're going to keep on getting their kedusha back. Because after all, he said to begin with, they're going to be kodesh until you cut them down. So there's no way to be poyder them until they're cut down. And then after that, it's too late to be poyder them, because then they don't have kedusha anymore. Which we'll discuss that point tomorrow, Bas Hashem. So the Sefer has to use that expression, Ein Lehem Pidyon, Tonanami Reisha, Yesh Lehem Pidyon. So the Reisha uses the expression, Yesh Lehem Pidyon. So the Reisha didn't use the word Kedoshas because then it wants to match the Sefer. So again, according to the Ran, the Gemara was not asking at all on the word Ve'enim Kedoshas. And according to the other Girsa, according to the Girsa that we have in front of us, it was. And the answer is because in the Sefer, you can't just say Ein and Kedoshas. The fact is, on the contrary, they do have Kedusha. They have a stronger Kedusha. You can't even be poyder them. Therefore, it had to use the word Ein Lehem Pidyon in the Sefer, and therefore it had to use Yesh Lehem Pidyon in the Reisha. I did the boy means since it wanted Lamisna to teach safer in the safer of the Mishnah, Ein Lehem Pidyon, that there's no Pidyon, Tonanami Reisha, therefore teaches in the Reisha also Yesh Lehem Pidyon. So the Gemara asked, Heichin Noda, how exactly, what was the Loshon he used to make these things, to make these things hekdesh? After all, if you just use the words of the Mishnah, the Ran explains, look, any natia eventually, any plant eventually is going to be cut down. You wait long enough, any plant is going to be cut down. So if he just says these plants will be kodesh if they're not chopped down, then eventually they're all going to be chopped down. So the hekdesh shouldn't even be chal in the first place. So because he's not talking about if they're not chopped down b'chlal. He's talking about if they're not chopped down today. And then the whole day passed, and they still haven't been chopped down. Well, the Gemara asked him, "Came lomeli the Maimer." Well, in that case, then what's the chiddush of the Mishnah? Pshita. Obviously, you make a hekdesh on a tnai. Then, when the tnai comes true, hekdesh is chal. Here, he said, they will be hekdesh if they're not chopped down today. Well, they weren't chopped down today, therefore they're hekdesh. What's the chiddush of the Mishnah? The answer is loy tzricha. You're going to ika zika nefisha. The chiddush is we're talking about. Like we said before, there was a tremendous windstorm. So therefore, it's not that he was talking about a regular way. We're going to chop down the trees. He's talking about I expect these trees to be knocked down by the wind. So they want to ask Rakatoni la gabitalis. So what? So we already. But what do you mean though? Not so what. We're learning it together in the Mishnah, together with the case of a talus. The talus, the Sreifa Kaima, is a talus something that is expected to be burnt? Mela, in other words, when it comes to plants, you can say, given enough time, plants will be chopped down. But when you talk about a talus, not necessarily is a talus ever going to get burnt.
No,
that's the point. In other words, so we're asking. In other words, what the Gemara is asking is, so you're telling me that this case of the you're telling me that in the case of the trees, that you're asking, why do you need that? You're asking and you're saying you need to limit it to today because otherwise trees are eventually chopped down. But in that case, we see on the other hand with the talus, talisim are not ever necessarily going to get burnt. So what exactly is the Mishnah talking about? So here we have in the Gemara Ein, there's a different Girsa Ella, rather, same idea. For example, there's a fire. So now, again, he's saying, I fully expect that this talus is going to be burnt in the fire, but if somehow it should manage to survive, similarly, in the case of the trees, we're talking about that there's a big windstorm. Salkadaitach. So now you could think that he's saying the masaka daita de limits natslan. He's thinking to himself, it's impossible that these trees are going to survive the windstorm or that the talus is going to survive the fire. And therefore, that is why he made the neder. And so maybe it should be considered like nidre shagogas. Maybe the neder should not be chal at all. Kamash malan. Therefore, the Mishnah is telling us, since he knows that there is the possibility that they will survive, then his hektish is in effect. In other words, when we said before, the Rosh had said at the beginning, the reason why this Mishnah is here is because this is an example of Nidre Shigogas, but it's not really. It is Nidre Shigogas in the sense that he didn't know for sure, but unlike the earlier Nidre Shigogas, where he genuinely forgot that he had eaten or whatever and made his neder chal on that t'nai, here he knows to begin with that there is the possibility that there are two possibilities. It's most likely that these trees will not survive, but there is the possibility there is. It's most likely the talus will be burnt, but there is the possibility that there is, that he is. Therefore, when he says that these plants will be korban or the talus will be a korban if they survive, then we say, yeshlan pidyon, then we say, there is kedusha on them, meaning that the neder is chal on them, whether we mean a neder of that they're also to him, or whether we mean a neder that he's going to use the value of them towards buying a korban. But either way, we say yesh lahem pidyon. Ultimately, we are able to be poyed to them because once the fire is over, once the storm is over, we see they are standing. Well, now at that point, they become kodesh. Good, like anything else of kedusha, we can be poyed to them. We can go and buy them back from the hekdesh. As opposed to, again, the contrast is with the second part of the Mishnah, where he says they will become korban. Where he says they will become korban only when he says they're korban until they're chopped down or until they're burnt. Then we say that's a different matter, because then the problem is they're not yet Kaddish. And then as soon as you chop them down, they become Kaddish. And then at that point, as we're going to learn tomorrow, it's too late to be poured to them.
So once they turn Kaddish, you can't poured to them.
So one, that's the point, in other words, because you can't be poured to them once. The problem is, we're going to discuss in the Gemara tomorrow, that what happens is that you're poyed to them, but then the Kaddusha comes right back on them. Because after all, you said the Kaddusha is going to be until they're chopped down. So
they're not chopped down.
If they're not, so, and then as soon as they're chopped down, so now we're actually going to have a machlokas in the Gemara tomorrow. We're going to start tomorrow with a machlokas between Barpada and Ula. What happens after they're chopped down when you pour to them? Does that work or not? We're going to see tomorrow, Bez Hashem. But in any case, the Reisha of the Mishnah is talking about, he says, on the contrary, he says they should be a korban if they're not chopped down. So then when the day passes and they're not chopped down and they survive the fire or they survive the windstorm, then we say now his neder is in effect. You shouldn't think it's nidre shgogas. That's what the Gemara is telling us. You shouldn't think it's nidre shgogas, because he figured almost certainly they're going to, since he was holding open the possibility that they might actually make it through, then therefore his neder is in effect. Nevertheless, though, once the neder is in effect, yesh lahem pidyon, then you can be poyed to them like any other hektish. If we say that he meant that the value of them should be towards a korban, good. So he does that. He sells the talus, so he sells the tree, takes the money and uses it towards a korban. If we say like the other explanation, that it means he made it off limits to himself as a koinam, then again, the Ran says we'd be following the shitta of Reb Meir, who says that any koinam is considered a form of hektish, and therefore that if he misuses it, he's committing me'ila, and then you're going to have the usual rules of me'ila with kodshim apply.